Tantor Audio presents Beneath Him by Carmel Kent. Narrated by Carly Robbins and Roger Wayne.
Prologue. Someone once told me that we are only as good as we believe ourselves to be. I've let myself forget for too long.
Chapter 1. Sky. The guy standing in front of me was about to get smacked across the back of the head. Yes, I knew I was only 5'2", barely. Yes, I knew I slapped like a girl, obviously, because I had the girl parts to back that up. Yes, he looked like he was built like a brick wall and could probably knock me down with a single finger if I started any trouble. But he was seriously pissing me off. The rude tone of voice he was using to speak to the young girl behind the counter, like she was beneath him, was rubbing me the wrong way. Anyone with half a brain knew you didn't give attitude to the person who served you, not unless you wanted to find something in your drink that didn't belong there. So either this guy had half a brain, or he was just a huge snob. I was going to go with the latter, considering he was dressed in an expensive navy suit that could probably pay my rent for a month. The Rolex that I spied around his wrist could easily pay my rent for a year. High roller. Jackass. I specifically asked for my coffee black, so why is there milk in it? His tone was scathing and a complete overreaction to the situation. We were talking about freaking milk. Get the hell over it. I'm very sorry about that, sir, the girl apologized with a forced smile. Her name tag said, Aria. Let me get you a new coffee. He snorted, and I pictured him rolling his eyes. I don't understand why it's so hard for you people to do your job properly. It's not very difficult to master. You people? Wow. What a complete and utter douchebag. What was this guy's deal? Sir, once again, I apologize. The girl was gritting her teeth like he was really testing her patience. If you could take a seat, I'll serve these customers and have your order out to you as soon as it's ready. Naturally, the Java Bean was crowded this early in the morning, and this guy was holding up the line over something that didn't really matter. I'd just spent 8 hours on the road, with an overnight pit stop, driving from Carson City, Nevada, to Beverly Hills, California, and I needed a coffee fix before I started my new job. Glancing over my shoulder, I noticed 10 people standing in line who appeared just as irritated as I felt. Honestly, I did not have time for this. No one did this early in the morning. Hey, pal, I tapped him on the shoulder. He jerked away from me as though a leper had touched him. My mouth fell open a little as I was confronted with his face. The guy was attractive, really attractive. He had a chiseled jaw with a cleft on his chin, dark hair that fell into azure blue eyes, and a deep tan that was accentuated by his dark suit. What? He narrowed his eyes at me in a who the hell are you and why are you talking to me way. The look on his face was enough to slap some sense into me. Hot or not, this guy was a jerk. Focus, Sky. Focus. The nice girl has apologized twice already. I think it's completely unnecessary for you to continue abusing her. I pointed a thumb over my shoulder at the people standing in line. I'm sure these other people have better things to do with their time than listen to you complaining about milk. I know I do. My words didn't seem to have any effect on him at all, because all he did was sneer at me like I was an ugly duckling who had dared to speak to a beautiful swan. All of a sudden, I felt naked. It was like one of those bad dreams where you got up in front of the entire school to give a speech, and then for some irrational reason, you were naked. This was one of those moments, one of those cringeworthy moments where I wanted the ground to open up and swallow me whole, because that was how he was staring at me. Like I was naked, exposed, vulnerable. Which wasn't how I wanted to feel when I was trying to fight for equal rights for early morning coffee drinkers in the Java Bean. "Zero," he said. "What?" I blinked, completely confused. Was this guy deranged, too? "That's how many shits I give about your opinion." With a widening sneer, he started to turn, but I reached out and grabbed his arm. I felt like an overboiling kettle right now, ready to blow. I was about to kick this guy in the baby maker. "Listen here, you're the one being obnoxious and holding everyone up. Just get your damn coffee with no milk and leave." No one was going to miss him. He pulled his arm away from me as his eyes flicked over me like he was appraising a garbage dump. "When you can afford to dress the way I do, then your opinion matters to me. Until then, be on your way, baby." Baby? Baby? Who the hell was he to call me baby? I couldn't believe the level jerkface had taken this to. I'd been trying to keep it classy, but clearly he liked to play dirty. I knew I wasn't dressed anything like him, but there was nothing wrong with what I was wearing. Jeans, a white tee, and a pair of black Converse. Yet somehow, he really did make me feel like an ugly duckling, the way he was staring me down with his piercing blue eyes, like I really wasn't good enough to address him. I maintained my composure as I spoke, though from the unimpressed look on his face, I knew he couldn't care less about what I had to say. "I am not your baby," I fumed. "You go around acting like you're better than everyone else, but really, you get a kick out of making everyone feel like shit, so you can feel better about your own inadequacies." Harsh? Maybe. But the baby comment had pushed me over the edge. "I don't have any inadequacies, but I can see that you certainly do." His expression darkened, and if looks could kill, then this was lethal. "Plenty of them." My face flamed immediately, but before my jumbled mind could think of a biting comeback, he pushed past me and strode out of the Java Bean. The encounter with him had definitely been unnerving. The way he'd stared at me with those blue eyes was hard to forget. It was too bad that someone so attractive had such a horrible personality. I didn't like getting into pointless fights, but I wasn't a pushover. "Thanks for stepping in. I was trying not to lose it," the server Aria said, shooting me a grateful smile as she tightened her ponytail. "Now, what can I get you today?" Still feeling rattled, I managed a faint smile in return as I stepped up to the counter. "A coconut mocha, please," then I added, with an extra shot of espresso. I would not let Jerkface ruin my day, and that extra shot was a great way to start.
Nick. I was gripping my car keys so tightly in my hand that they were starting to cut into the flesh of my palm. No one ever talked to me like that before. And even though I'd kept a cool demeanor, the mouthy girl had definitely shaken up my morning. Taking a deep breath, I forced myself to relax as I put distance between the Java Bean and myself. That girl had sass. She didn't seem affected by me like most women were. I didn't like her, but I liked a challenge. Girls like her didn't fall into my life very often. Maybe it was a good thing I'd never see her again.
Sky. Here I was trying not to be nervous. Here I was failing miserably. I couldn't help it, though. I'd never felt this out of place before. I was pretty sure I'd never looked this out of place before. I was standing in the most expensive foyer I'd ever set foot in, and quickly coming to the realization that there was no way I would fit in here. The red and gold velvet rug I stood on had probably cost twice as much as everything I owned put together. There was a cream-colored chaise lounge placed against the wall, exotic-looking potted plants in every corner, and expensive oil paintings of scenery hanging on the walls. I definitely wasn't a materialistic person. I like to think that I was pretty down to earth, but standing here in this moment, I felt pretty inadequate. jerk-face's words from earlier were haunting me. Maybe I did need to dress better. For a split second, I almost considered turning around and walking back out of the oak double doors, but that was just me being ridiculous. There was a reason why, out of so many applicants, I had been the one chosen to work here at the Ruggerson Mansion. Sure, my mom's best friend, Tori, knew the Ruggersons and had put in a good word, but they still could have turned me down. Just to be straight, it wasn't some amazing position. I'd been hired as the live-in nanny for Oscar Ruggerson's niece, Madeline Stanley. But it was still overwhelming considering their status. The Ruggersons were one of the many wealthy families that lived in Beverly Hills. Their wealth came from Oscar, who was a successful entertainment lawyer with numerous high-profile clients. His wife, Chloe, was what you would call a socialite. I wasn't too sure what she did exactly, but Tori had told me she liked to throw extravagant parties and spend her husband's money. Tori had also informed me that Oscar and Chloe had two children, Nick and Emily. Emily was 18 and had just started college, while Nick worked with his father. Apparently, Nick was also somewhat of a womanizer, who had a new woman in his bed every night. He didn't sound like my kind of person. When I'd first told my best friend, Erin Campbell, about my new job, she'd shrieked for an entire 5 minutes about what a big deal this was. She was easily excitable and a drama queen. Since this was my first proper job in the child care field after recently graduating from college, I just had to focus on doing my very best and not letting the Ruggersons' wealth and glamorous life overwhelm me. "Skye Hudson?" a sharp voice inquired. Snapping out of my thoughts, I glanced around to find a middle-aged woman approaching me, dressed in chic royal blue, tailored pants, and a loose white blouse, not to mention the gold jewelry that adorned her. It was easy to assume this was Chloe. This was my first time meeting her. I'd previously met Oscar and their current nanny, Mrs. Potts, who was soon to retire, for my interview. But Chloe hadn't been present. Crap. Maybe I was underdressed after all. In all honesty, I'd been way too broke to buy anything dressier than my usual attire. Having student loans and credit card payments could do that to a girl. I needed to chill out. It wasn't like I was here to do anything fancy. I was here to take care of a 4-year-old, for God's sake. My job description didn't require me to dress up. 4-year-olds were messy. Everyone knew that. Yes? I frowned at how shaky my voice was. I wanted to project myself as calm and confident, not as a nervous 21-year-old who was incapable of speaking coherently. I took 2 deep breaths to compose myself. Chloe looked me up and down, disapproval clear across her face. Obviously, you are aware of who I am, but I will introduce myself anyway. I am Chloe Ruggerson. She said Ruggerson like it was some sort of royal title that had been bequeathed to her. The introduction wasn't necessary, so I nodded to show her that I was familiar with who she was. Yes, I do know who you are. What I didn't add was that I identified her as an arrogant socialite who had probably never worked a day in her life. Chloe gave me a thoroughly unpleasant look, and it was obvious that she wasn't impressed with me at all. I'm glad that even the lower class has heard of my name, she finally said, once she was done analyzing my appearance. Now, come with me. Oscar is waiting for you in his office. Okay. What about my bags? I glanced over at the worn-out suitcase and duffel bag I'd brought along. Chloe followed my gaze, and her upper lip curled in a sneer. We have a butler for that? Silly girl. But I guess you're not used to that kind of thing, are you? All of a sudden, I felt like I was one of those hideous insects that everyone was always trying to squish, like a roach. I didn't want to be a roach. I wanted to be a butterfly. Okay, then. My voice sounded just as small as I felt. Follow me. Without another word, she spun around and began click-clacking across the tiled floor in her black heels. Quickening my pace, I followed after her and down a hallway, trying to take everything in as we walked. They definitely hadn't been sparse about the paintings and plants. They were everywhere. Not that they weren't nice to look at, it was just so lavish and over the top. Finally, Chloe stopped outside a door with a small gold plate which had Oscar Ruggerson engraved on it in pretty cursive. This is where Oscar usually works from, if he doesn't go into the office. Chloe's tone was curt as she pushed open the door and stepped inside ahead of me. Rude alert! Trying not to let her coldness get to me, I entered the office after her, my jaw dropping when my eyes fell on the interior. The office was immaculate, and even grander than I'd expected. A mahogany desk was positioned in front of large bay windows, letting the summer sunlight stream in through the glass and creating a warm glow throughout the room. There was a large shelf filled with books lined up against one side of the wall, and an antique-style fireplace on the opposite wall. It was like they'd hired an interior decorator that had puked paintings and potted plants everywhere. It really was beautiful, though. A large painting hanging above the fireplace of a beautiful young woman with blonde hair and hazel-green eyes caught my attention. I wondered if she was related to the Ruggersons. Their daughter, maybe?
Chloe, I see you've brought Miss Hudson.
An aging man sat in the large chair behind the desk. He had streaks of silver through his dark hair and wore wire-rimmed glasses. There was a pleasant smile on his face as he studied me. This was Oscar Ruggerson, self-made millionaire. From our previous meeting, I had decided that I liked him. There was a kindness and warmth about him, which immediately made me relax. Yes, here she is. The sneer in Chloe's tone didn't go unnoticed by me, as she shot me a sideways glance. This woman was very quickly starting to become one of my least favorite people. After coffee shop jerk, of course. Oscar stood up and extended his hand across the desk, and I hurried forward to shake it.
It's so nice to see you again, Miss Hudson. I hope the drive down here went smoothly.
Unlike his wife, there was a smile in his voice as he spoke. Yes, sir. The drive was fine. I didn't bother mentioning that my piece of crap 1999 Toyota Camry had almost failed to start, because that was just embarrassing.
Please, take a seat.
His tone was pleasant as he gestured to the seat across from him. As Oscar and I sat down, Chloe walked around the desk and pulled up a chair beside her husband. She folded her hands on top the table and stared at me as though she was trying to make her status clear.
Yeah, I got it, lady. You were married to the boss man.
Before Oscar could even speak, Chloe was already grilling me.
You signed a confidentiality contract when you accepted this position. I want to make sure you understand what that means.
Well, obviously, unless this was a trick question. That I have to keep details about my job confidential? I said it like a question because I wasn't sure if this woman was for real. There was a snicker, and I looked over to see Oscar trying to hide a smile. Chloe shot him a glare, and he covered the snicker with a cough. Clearly, he thought his wife had asked a silly question, too. Chloe redirected her glare at me.
It's more than that. Under no circumstances are you permitted to speak about our family, anyone associated with us, or what your duties are.
I nodded. Yes, I'm aware of that. You know, because that was exactly what they'd told me in my interview and what the contract I'd signed had outlined.
I think she understands, Chloe.
There was a smile in Oscar's voice.
Maybe we should let her get settled in.
Chloe seemed miffed
that her husband wasn't following her line of interrogation.
Well, I need to approve of her, Oscar. I can't just have anyone working for us.
I don't think Sky is just anyone, dear. She passed the interview process, and I believe is more than capable of taking care of our darling niece. Mrs. Potts and I both approve of her.
Chloe's face flushed pink, and she gave her husband a hard look. She definitely didn't like it when he didn't take her side. She probably wanted him to be more severe with me. But it looked like that wasn't going to happen.
Well, I guess she'll do.
Her eyes took in my outfit again. You won't have a uniform, but we expect you to dress appropriately. You are working for the Ruggerson family, after all, and we have many influential people going in and out throughout the day. This isn't some $10 an hour after-school babysitting job. Is that clear?
Crystal.
I knew my tone was curt, but I was really getting sick of Chloe talking down to me.
I'm going to tell our daughter Emily to come down and get you.
Oscar quickly reached for the phone on his desk, obviously sensing the friction between his wife and me.
She'll take you to see Madeline, and then show you to your room.
He became distracted when the phone connected.
Emily, dear, will you come downstairs and show the new nanny around?
As we waited on Oscar, I tried to avoid eye contact with Chloe. Despite not looking at her, I knew that she was staring daggers at me. For some reason, she didn't like me, and I had a feeling that first impressions, the way I dressed, the way I'd done my hair, the way I didn't fall over myself trying to pander to her, had played a big part in her behavior towards me. But really, how was I to know that wearing jeans would offend her? I wondered if their daughter was anything like Chloe. If she was then, we were going to have a problem.
Emily will be waiting in the foyer for you.
Oscar's voice cut into my thoughts as he replaced the phone receiver.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Not at all. If there is anything you need, then don't hesitate to ask me. Our son Nicholas also lives here, and I'm sure you'll run into him soon. Mrs. Potts will tell you everything you need to know about taking care of my little angel.
A fond smile appeared on Oscar's face as he spoke about his niece.
She is the sweetest little girl in the world, and I'm sure you'll have no trouble with her.
Yes, she is too perfect for words, Chloe added.
I stared in surprise as Chloe gave her first genuine smile. I guess they both loved their niece. Oscar nodded toward the door.
Emily is waiting for you. She's very excited to meet you.
Okay, sir. Thank you, again.
As I turned to leave, Oscar spoke again.
Oh, and Sky, we will be having a dinner tonight with close friends of the family. I would like it very much if you were there.
Feeling overwhelmed and a little flustered that he wanted me at an important dinner, I managed to nod like an idiot. Chloe didn't look at all impressed by this, and shot her husband a death glare which he pointedly ignored.
And Sky, one more thing, Chloe said, giving me an unkind smile as her ice-blue eyes stared me down. Don't go out of your way to socialize with anyone here, that you don't have to.
Okay, I responded, wondering if she was referring to anyone in particular. Wanting to put distance between myself and the evil queen, I opened up the door and left the office, wondering what the heck I'd gotten myself into. Chapter 2 Sky. My heart sank when I saw Emily Ruggerson. She was gorgeous. She definitely wasn't the girl in the painting, because she was the spitting image of her mother, with golden blonde hair that fell in long waves around her, large sapphire blue eyes, a slender frame, and a heart-shaped face. Considering how beautiful she was, and the fact she looked so much like her mother, I assumed she would be a royal pain, so it took me by complete surprise when she stepped forward and enveloped me in a hug.
before I even knew what had hit me.
It's so nice to meet you, Skye. I'm Amelia, but everyone calls me Emily, she said, releasing me. You have no idea how wonderful it is to have a girl close to my age here.
Realizing that I hadn't said anything yet, I quickly blurted out, You're a lot younger than I am. Had that sounded rude? I wasn't trying to be rude. It had just been the first thing on my mind.
Emily laughed as she adjusted the straps on the floral sundress she was wearing. Well, I'm 18, she said this like it wasn't a big difference. To me, it was like confirmation that I'd been born in the prehistoric ages.
Oh, to be 18 again, I said dreamily.
Emily laughed again, and I started to relax around her. Despite bearing a striking resemblance to her mother, she was nothing like her personality-wise.
Thank God for that. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad around here after all.
Let me introduce you to Madeline, and I can take you to your room afterwards.
That sounds great.
As I followed Emily up a flight of stairs, I wondered if Madeline was going to be anything like Chloe, or if she would be more like Oscar and Emily. Obviously, I was hoping for the latter, but I wasn't going to get my hopes up. It was easy to imagine a 4-year-old being spoiled rotten, living this lifestyle. The second floor of the mansion was just as opulent as the first. There were paintings, ornaments, drapes, chaises, and potted plants placed all along the corridors. Everywhere my eyes fell, there was something to see. The corridor we were in verged off in 3 different directions, and I already knew I would easily get lost here. This place was massive. The Ruggersons weren't modest about their wealth, and I had a feeling that Chloe played a large part in flaunting their money. "Your room is on this floor," Emily told me as we walked along an open balcony that looked down onto the floor below us. The family bedrooms are all on the 3rd floor, and the ballroom takes up most of the 4th floor.
Holy shit! They had a freaking ballroom? No one I knew had a ballroom.
I suddenly felt like I was in some 18th century historical romance novel. Emily continued speaking. We also have a gym, an indoor pool, an outdoor pool, and a tennis court all on the ground floor. If you're more of a bookworm like I am, then we have 2 libraries. One on the ground floor and an even bigger one on this floor.
I'm a total bookworm, too. I figure, why do I need a guy in my bed when I can just fall asleep with my Kindle?
Emily burst out laughing. Truer words have never been spoken. We ascended the next set of stairs to the 3rd floor, and Emily continued down another corridor. Here's my room, she said, pointing to a door on the right. Feel free to come by any time if you ever need anything. I glanced around, trying my best to remember where we were. It was definitely going to take me a few false starts before I would be able to find my way around here with ease.
Madeline's bedroom is to the left, but during the day she's here in her playroom, Emily said, gesturing to the slightly ajar door. She's in with Mrs. Potts right now, so she'll tell you everything you need to know about Madeline and her schedule.
Where are her parents? I asked suddenly. No one had mentioned anything about them, and I was more than a little curious. Emily's smile faltered, and she seemed to hesitate before speaking. They died when she was a baby. We're the only family she knows. She isn't quite at the age yet where she's asking about her parents, so we're avoiding that subject for now. Surprise and sadness hit me at the same time. It was horrible that Madeline would never know her parents. I couldn't imagine not having either of my parents in my life, but at least she had the Ruggersons taking care of her.
I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't mean to pry. I didn't want her thinking I was being nosy.
The tension in Emily's face relaxed, and that easy smile that reminded me of Oscar returned. Don't even worry about it. Without another word, she pushed open the door to Madeline's playroom, and we stepped inside. Playroom? Didn't even begin to describe what we'd just walked into. The room was king-sized. My entire apartment could have fit in here easily. The Ruggersons had obviously spared no expense in giving Madeline the best of everything. One side of the room was dominated by a small-scale playground with a seesaw, a swing set, and a slide that ended in a ball pit. I had never seen a 4-year-old's room with a ball pit before, and I probably never would again. The rest of the room had shelves.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?